Hello and welcome to the Fantasy Game Plan Podcast. My name is Leo Howell. I'm joined by Matt Harmon. And Matt, we have football to talk about.
Isn't it exciting?
Real football happened on real football fields with real players playing real counts, not preseason, not exhibition football.
It was incredible, you know, and it's always incredible every year, but this year it felt particularly good. It just feels like it's been so long. It's with all the, you know, you and I are both intimately enthralled, you know, with the NFL draft process this year and everything. It just felt like we've just been through so much. It was great to finally see the games take place.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a very long offseason, and, you know, as a Buccaneers fan, there was a lot of change this offseason. You know, apparently not enough considering the week one results, but and then, yeah, going through the draft process and, you know, really ramping up all the fantasy writing over the, like, kind of month before the season, it felt like it would never get here, but it did, and now reality sets in, and that's kind of what we're going to talk about today, is that fantasy football is so often seen as kind of a draft event that a lot of people get so hung up and caught up on the draft, but there's so much more to fantasy football than just the draft. There's trading, there's roster management, there's setting your lineups, there's working the waiver wire, and these are the things that wind up winning and losing leagues. And so that's what we kind of want to talk about, is that we're looking back on week one, and we need to have the right perspective on what happened in week one so that we don't ruin our teams moving forward. So I just kind of guess in the big picture, because I know you have some thoughts here, how do you just generally approach kind of the post week one hysteria? And at this point, it's a little too late for anybody to, you know, maybe make waiver decisions based on week one. But that's not really what we're looking for here. It's just kind of like week by week, and this obviously includes week one. How do you react after a week?
Yeah, it's such a delicate balancing act, in my opinion. You know, you can't completely abandon all of your thoughts, your research, you know, the data that you've collected, you know, to write before the minute before the season opens. Because once that happens, you know, everything sort of changes. You know, you can't just abandon all that. You know, you can't just because a player or a team, you know, did the complete opposite of what you expected, doesn't mean that you just now, that's completely and totally the new reality. You know, but you can't also discount that is new data, and, you know, it's the latest that we have to work with. You know, so there's a delicate balance in my mind where you have to take what you've learned in week one and, you know, mold it into something that you can infuse with what you already believed coming into the week. You know, and it's definitely a case by case thing. You know, and there are obvious ones like, you know, Jamal Charles was, you know, a disappointing player in week one. And I mean, I think everybody can agree that, you know, it's not time to panic on Jamal Charles or anything like that. You know, but there are also minor ones, you know, a player like Alan Hearns comes out and puts up a big stat line. You know, you don't want to overreact and think, well, he's going to be a top five fantasy receiver, obviously, but, you know, it does mean something. You know, I think it's foolish to just and there are some people that certainly do this, and some really smart people that just say, you know, you should more often err on the side of just completely discounting what you see in week one. Yeah, I think that's too passive. So there's definitely, you know, a bit of aggression that you need to show. But there's also, you know, don't just completely abandon everything you thought to this point as well.
Yeah, I definitely think that's true. You really need to continue to frame the way you evaluate players in a combination of preseason and the regular season. Like for instance, you know, Ladarius Green, Jason Witten, guys like that who had bad first weeks at the tight end position, and, you know, but a guy like Larry Donnell scores a bunch of points, like, yes, we kind of learned some things about Larry Donald that maybe we didn't know. He stepped into the limelight and became, you know, a prominent player in that offense. But it's not the time to make a rash decision and cut what is essentially, you know, like a 10th round pick in a Witten or a, you know, or a Green. 10th round is the latest. Like, Witten went higher than that in certain leagues. To pick up a guy in Donald who, you know, if we're being completely realistic about what he did, he caught 5 passes for 56 yards, and one of them happened to be in the end zone. If that one wasn't in the end zone, nobody would be talking about him right now. Just because that's the way fantasy points play out. You know, that bonus of a 6 extra points for that touchdown, you know, changes things. Nobody's scrambling to their waiver wire to get, you know, Owen Daniels right now, but he had, you know, a decent amount of fantasy points from the tight end position, but he didn't score. So,
right. Yeah, but a perfect example. I saw somebody in one of my leagues pick up Donnie Avery just because, yeah, you know, he had a good stat line, but it's like, okay, come on, you know, let's use some context here. Yeah. You know, he's not suddenly going to become fantasy relevant.
Yeah. And it is okay to shift your thoughts on certain players after their week one situation kind of unfolds. And if that brings them to a point where you can get rid of them, that's fine. Like for me, in some shallower leagues, like some 10 team leagues, I had Doug Baldwin on my rosters. Mm-hmm. And after seeing how he was used in week one, and just kind of realizing that the Seahawks are going to be a steamroller this year and are just going to run everybody over, and seeing that Percy was healthy and, you know, active on that offense, like I didn't feel like rostering him anymore because he was already a fringe guy in a 10 teamer. But, you know, if I'm in a 14 or 16 team league and I drafted him, you know, a little higher, I'm just going to bail on him, after 1 week. So it is really kind of up to your league, to your settings, things like that. But, you know, don't be afraid to cut bait on a guy. Also, you know, and when it comes to trades as well. And I think that that's the one main thing that I've been seeing, you know, questions about, and I'm sure that you get as well, is with trades. Like, don't forget, like, what you invested in these guys. Like, not to say that you should always base it on that, but, you know, I was offered DeAndre Hopkins for Vincent Jackson. Should I take it? Like, no, you shouldn't. Absolutely not. Like, yes, Hopkins had a better week than Jackson, but that can happen on any given week. That's not the right process to take. You can't base everything based on 1 week, even though, you know, there's not a huge gap there. Like the drop from Vincent Jackson to DeAndre Hopkins isn't incredible, but it is substantial enough to where 1 week of data is not enough to tilt the scales there.
Right. And I just kind of want to get your feedback on this, or your thoughts more likely. You know, I said that at one point this week that I don't really like to do any trading right after week one because everybody's mindset is so skewed. The only offers I usually sent out, and I have, you know, sent out a few of these, is, you know, I try to see if I can lowball somebody. And, yeah, you know, yeah, I mean, that's the one thing, that's the only thing I like to do in week one is like, okay, can I, you know, maybe, can I be that person that tricks someone into taking, you know, Marcus Wheaton for, you know, Toby Gerhardt, I think was one that I sent out, yeah, you know, just something like that. You know, can I use one of my, you know, I tend to draft a lot of wide receivers. I have one league where Wheaton is like my, you know, sixth guy or whatever. Can then I turn him into a running back too? You know, I try to do that stuff, but in general, I'm not really. Yeah, I like my team. I like the guys I drafted. I still believe in them long term. I'm not trying to sell low on somebody like Torrey Smith or something.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I agree with you. I'd rather. I'm not really even that big of a trader anyway. Yeah. Like, it's not. I don't like to usually trade. But when I do, yeah, I mean, you can't do it on after week one because you're almost always going to run into the situation where the person you're trading with is going to react either too much or too little to week one. And that's going to become an issue with how you're going to evaluate everything. Like, I've already got, it's tough for me to keep track. I think it's the same person offering me over and over again in the same league. It might be in two different leagues where I've gotten a couple different offers, but I've been offered Russell Wilson like three times in the past couple of days for just various receivers that are like, you know, and I have Jay Cutler already. I don't need a quarterback. It's just these weird trades that people are just kind of flinging out there because they, you know, maybe they watched Russell Wilson in week one and they didn't like, you know, how good that team is and how little he's going to have to throw. And they're trying to, you know, cut bait on him. But yeah, like I feel like if you, in almost any case, a trade should either get you a better starter than you're giving up or should give you more starters than you're giving up. Like, you shouldn't really focus on trading bench players unless you're trading like a bench player for a bench player to like balance out your depth. Yeah. And really at that point, like, you're almost better off just going to the waiver wire with a, you know, the at the bottom of your bench than trying to trade something else. But like, you know, for instance, if you were, you know, had a Marcus Wheaton and you paired him with, you know, Donald Brown, who you had on the end of your bench, and you got a Toby Gerhardt, like, that's a good trade. That's a good trade in any circumstance, even after week one, because that's not overreacting on your part. You know, the investment of that other person is, I think that these guys are going to do something big this year, bigger than we expected, and you're not taking on that risk. You're actually reducing that risk and taking on something safer and something more proven. So that's always a good deal. But otherwise, like, you know, the like DeAndre Hopkins is a name that's pretty big right now. Like a Julius Thomas, like, don't go out and overspend for Julius Thomas because he had a big first week.
Right.
Like, you should expect that. Like, you should know that. Don't go out and spend big for Brandon Cooks right now. You know, we may have seen his best game because he's a rookie and, you know, it was against the Atlanta defense. So there's just a lot of things that, you know, Cordarrelle Patterson, the person who drafted Cordarrelle Patterson obviously liked Cordarrelle Patterson. So don't,
his name,
you know,
his name's probably Matt Harmon.
So don't go out and try to get those guys. You can target guys that you liked and didn't get who had a bad week. Like, that's not a bad strategy, but even then, like, the person who drafted them, unless they're, you know, just totally on tilt, they liked them and that's why they drafted them. So, it just try to avoid week one trades unless it's, you know, it needs to be good, both based on draft value and kind of public perception value, because you can really get burned by, you know, giving up on a guy too early or buying into a guy too early with a week one trade. But with that in mind, let's move on. Let's talk about some guys from week one. We've already kind of mentioned a few. Who are a couple of just surprising performances? And you can even mention guys we've already talked about. Some surprising performances and how you'd handle those guys moving forward. What do you kind of think about those guys that you found surprising as you watched week one unfold?
Yeah, you mentioned DeAndre Hopkins, and that was one of the first ones when I, you know, and I was already starting to think about, okay, even like Sunday night, who, you know, who am I going to sell high, or, you know, who am I going to buy low? And I keep just thinking about my strategies for the next week. I like DeAndre Hopkins is a guy that if, you know, if I had him, and I do in a few leagues, you know, I'd try to see if I could sell high on him, because I think, you know, I watched most of that game between Washington and Houston, and he was, you know, Fitzpatrick was terrible, as everybody.
Okay, except. Okay. I'm going to do this. I'm going to go on the record right now. You have said, you continue to slander the name of Ryan Fitzmagic, and I'm not going to stand for it. So I'm going to go on the record, and I'm going to say that Ryan Fitzpatrick is not only going to start all 16 games, which you say he won't.
He will not.
But I believe that he may even start a 17th game as the playoff starter for the Houston Texans, because in case you didn't know, you talked about him playing the Washington defense, and yes, the Washington defense is bad. He plays the Oakland defense this week. The Oakland defense is bad. And as a member of an AFC South team, he gets two dates with the Colts defense, he gets two dates with the Jacksonville defense, and he gets two dates with the Tennessee defense. So that's a total of 8 of his fantasy football relevant weeks that are against bad defenses. You've already missed one, you know, against the Jaguar or the Washington. But you do get those Jaguars and other performances coming later. Yeah, and that division's so bad that I really feel like the Texans, with, you know, J.J. Watt being as ridiculous as he is, and, you know, I mean, Arian Foster's not a special athlete anymore. Like, he's kind of banged up and slowed down. He didn't have great numbers, but, you know, like, just talent-wise, just that offense, even though it's kind of old and you know, that's no different than the Colts offense, you know, apart from Andrew Luck, who is, you know, objectively, Andrew Luck is better than Ryan Fitzpatrick, but defensively, the Texans are better than the Colts and pretty much everyone else in that division. So, yeah, I just want to get that out there, that I want to go on the record as predicting that Fitzmagic will start all 16 games, and that I believe that they're a dark horse for the playoffs at this point, just because of how bad that division is. I don't think they're not one of the 8 best teams in the NFL, but, you know, that's not going to stop them from, you know, possibly making the playoffs.
Well, okay. The entire Fantasy Game Plan audience just got to hear you make a incorrect proposition. That's fine. I've written it down over here, so we know.
Hold on a second. Go on some little rant of yours. I want to check on something real quick.
This is Fitzpatrick is not a good football player.
Talking about Hopkins.
Yeah, I know. Okay. Yeah, we're done with that part. He's not a good. He's got a bad quarterback. He was bad. I don't care what, you know, Leo's gonna, you know, whatever his numbers he's gonna throw at you. That's fine. He's not a good football player. He hasn't been, he's a decent backup, but he's not gonna start all 16 games, and he's not good enough to get it done. He's just not the type of guy who can make a number two wide receiver fantasy relevant. And I think, you know, he will feed his top guys, and even his little pop gun arm can get it to a tight end or a slot receiver like Kendall Wright. I just don't think Hopkins is going to see enough regular work to be relevant more often than not. You know, he wasn't doing much in that game other than his one long touchdown, which was a result of a busted coverage and Bakari Rambo being probably the worst tackling safety in the league. That really might not be an exaggeration. It was one of the worst tackle attempts I've ever seen. He just put the clown suit on Rambo.
You say worst tackling attempts you've ever seen. Did you see Ha Ha Clinton Dix against the Seattle Seahawks?
Well, I guess I can give at least I can give Clinton Dix a mulligan for the fact that he's a rookie. But I mean, and this was his first game. But yeah, that was pretty horrendous. That was bad.
On Lockett's touchdown on the pop pass,
I don't even know what he did.
Attempt, just everything.
Honestly, I might have been able to do a better job than that. And
it just at least like get him closer to the sideline or something.
So that was disgusting. But the Rambo one was definitely pretty bad. And that, you know, that was where most of Hopkins' points came from.
He had like 80 yards and 69 of them came on one play. Like it was.
Yeah, exactly. I actually had somebody right before we came on the show. I actually had a friend text me and say, "Hey, should I, you know, somebody wants to trade me DeAndre Hopkins for Zach Stacy, and he would be the party receiving Hopkins." I said, "No, don't take that." You know, because I think people are going to look at Hopkins and see that he had this big week one. You know, without having watched the game or even seeing that he had one big long score, and they're going to think, oh, he's a second-year wide receiver, he's breaking out. I just don't think his circumstances – I think he's a good player, but I don't think his circumstances are going to lend to that. But anyway, that's one.
Matt, sure. Let's just say for a second that there was a second-year wide receiver who had one really long play for a touchdown in week one and didn't have a very good quarterback and wasn't on a very good offense. And you say that you want to sell high on them because they couldn't possibly continue to live up to this. That would be Cordarrelle Patterson.
Okay.
Can you tell me what Cordarrelle Patterson's receiving numbers were on the day?
It was like 2 or 3 catches for 20 something yards, right?
Yes.
Okay. Some of the guys from Sportable and I are actually in this big group chat or whatever. And so I've noticed the past 2 or 3 days, every time I get out of work, I see they've all been talking the same sort of stuff about Patterson that you're talking right now. I'm like, why do I have to be barraged with this. And I mean, I get it. I've kind of assumed the, you know, the captain's seat on Cordero Patterson's bandwagon. Let me just put it this way.
Do you believe that it is sustainable to score a ridiculously long touchdown every five or six times you carry the ball?
For most people?
For literally anyone, including Cordero Patterson.
I don't, honestly, you know, and I don't say this often, he is a special player. He's a unique player.
You know what else was special? The Rams attempts to tackle him on that run.
Look, he keeps doing this. I mean, that's the thing. If this was the first time he's done it, I'd be, okay, yeah, this is maybe something you shouldn't expect. But he keeps doing things like this. He keeps doing these things that just say, oh, he won't do that again. And he does it again. And look, I get that, you know, he wasn't targeted. He didn't have a lot of catches. I don't think you could take too much away from that because this was a blowout and, you know, he didn't really have the chance to this wasn't the type of game where they'd just be feeding Patterson again and again because they didn't need to do that. And then, look, he's still, even in a game where he didn't need to be heavily involved as a receiver, which, you know, if you read my work and, you know, anyone who's not familiar with me, and I don't know, you know, how you stumbled upon this podcast, if you're not, you know, my work, Reception Perception, the series that, you know, is kind of, is my baby and, you know, all that stuff. That, he's one of the ones that I studied, and I'm a big believer in him. I'm a believer he's a special talent. I think he has the ball skills, you know, everything you need to be one of the best receivers in the game. And so I think he's completely capable of putting up the receiving numbers. And then you're going to get these long runs as a bonus. So no, I think this is the beginning of the breakout for Patterson. And I'll put my stamp on that because I know I'm confident in it.
All I need is a 2-touchdown week from Sean Green this week, and my what you thought was ridiculous statement this preseason about Sean Green scoring more touchdowns than Cordero Patterson will be right on track, because for all of his shenanigans this offseason with Patterson, his team scored 34 points and he only scored 1 touchdown. It wasn't even doing the thing that his position does most often. I just feel like
you can keep saying that, but he's carried
the ball 15 times in his NFL career and he has 4 touchdowns. I'm pretty sure that if you went and looked at like John Kuhn's first 15 carries in the NFL, he probably had 4 touchdowns too. And I know that they're from different places on the field in different circumstances, but it's even less predictable to give a guy credit for consistently scoring long rushing touchdowns, because there's nothing sustainable about that whatsoever. Because just to go back to the play against St. Louis, if any of the 5 guys who surrounded him and tried to, you know, hug his hips instead of actually hitting him and tackling him, if any of them had tackled him, it's a good 3 or 4 fantasy points, but it's not, you know, this game breaking thing. So
sure.
I just don't feel like you can begin to, I don't think that you can continue to you can start to build the foundation of trust on a guy who had 5 targets in the passing game and caught 3 passes over 26 yards, but, you know, was given a few, you know, I'm not going to say gimmicky because it's not, you know, they were fairly traditional, you know, at least the toss play that scored the touchdown was a traditional play. But just that it's even so, he had 3 of them. Like, essentially what this is like, you know, 10 years ago or whatever, drafting Dante Hall in hopes that you'd get his punt returns. Oh, you know,
no,
like,
it's not.
It's chasing big plays that aren't sustainable.
Look, I know that's what, and again, I know that's what he's shown so far. And this is only 1 week, you know, this is only 1 week and it wasn't a blowout. I don't think we have gotten to see all the development that he's apparently made as a receiver and all the positive things that I saw him doing as a rookie last year. You know, when I looked at all of his snaps from that second half of the year, I'm just telling you, this guy is a special talent. He's unique. This is the beginning of the breakout. I'm willing to put my stamp on that. And on most cases, I would agree with you. You don't bet on just occasional big plays like this. I don't really like having those guys on my fantasy teams. I'm just telling you, this guy's different, and that's fine. You know, I don't expect everybody to agree, but you can.
If you have Cordero Patterson, you should sell him. Is what I'm.
No, saying. You shouldn't. You should hold on tight.
Because if you're going to base everything off of 15 rushing attempts and 48 career receptions, whatever, we can talk about Cordero Patterson all day. We will not. I will say that one guy that surprised me, and I've already kind of mentioned him, is Brandon Cooks. I did an article for rotogrinders.com where I kind of looked into his first game, and I was really surprised that at the way the Saints used him. And this isn't to say that you should go all in on Brandon Cooks, because it's the Saints offense, and outside of Jimmy Graham, it is not a predictable offense at all, because Drew Brees is very he's a very balanced guy, and he's going to move the ball around to different players. But there was a lot of people talking about how Brandon Cooks was just going to be kind of a Darren Sproles-y type of player. And that's not true at all. And that was proven by the fact that on the second play from scrimmage, Cooks is put out there in the slot and just runs straight at the safety and then just breaks off his route into open space in the zone and gets a catch. Like, yes, they used him out of the backfield. Yes, they used him out wide. Yes, they gave him an end around. What that tells me is in the different ways that they used him, is that they're designing plays for him and that he's going to be consistently involved. So if you have Brandon Cooks, and you can sell him super high, like, you know, whatever, like if somebody's going to give you, you know, Antonio Brown for Brandon Cooks, like, you know, go ahead and do that. But otherwise, like, I feel like Brandon Cooks is another week like this away from kind of establishing himself in a, you know, a more reliable role in the Saints offense. And so he's a guy that really surprised me because I wasn't expecting this. He looked strong at catching the ball, you know, for being a little guy with little hands. He definitely attacked the ball well and caught it well and you know, took a couple hits and kind of held up to them. So I was very surprised at the way the Saints used him and the way that he played. So if you have him, be encouraged by it. If you don't, I think you can still wait another week because I don't think his value can get much higher than it is right now, but we want to continue to see how they use him, particularly if Kenny Stills comes back and see. But what are your thoughts on Brandon Cooks, particularly after week one?
Yeah, I think Cooks definitely showed a little more involvement and potential for consistent value than I expected. You know, I wasn't really crazy about where he kind of started to go in some drafts, you know, the closer we got, you know, to the start of the season. But he definitely looked like he inherited that Sproles role as many, you know, projected and hoped. And yeah, I think he's going to have pretty consistent value, you know, flex value, at least, you know, and that'll be, you know, varying between high end and low end flex value. But I think that's a pretty good play, going forward. I like Cooks and same with, and this was a little more predictable, but same with another rookie receiver, you know, Kelvin Benjamin. I think he showed right away that, he was the real deal, you know, carried it right over from preseason, which is always great to see. Yeah, you know, I really like what Benjamin and Cooks showed.
Though, it's you have to be particularly careful about how he's used because the quarterback he was playing with is not the quarterback he's going to be playing with all season. So
right.
His usage and things like that are totally different because Derek Anderson was just getting rid of the ball quickly because, you know, if the Tampa Bay pass rush had ever got there, which it wasn't going to with the way things were going, he wasn't Cam Newton. He wasn't going to be able to get away. There were a lot of very quick passes. And just obviously different quarterback, different way of going through progressions, different way of looking at things. If Cam prefers, you know, Olsen and Kotchery and Benjamin's his third option, his value could plummet, you know, next week. So,
yeah, I don't really expect that to happen. I mean, I hear that.
I mean, I don't expect it to either, but it's still, you know, completely legitimate.
Yeah, sure.
Possibility. Any change in quarterback can totally, you know, you know, Josh Freeman always got the ball to Mike Williams and, you know, Mike Lennon takes over and then Vincent Jackson, you know, kind of completely dominates the target shares. Like it's, you know, it's very possible for a quarterback and a wide receiver to have more of a chemistry or less of a chemistry and that to really have a tangible impact on their fantasy value.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, there's also kind of the X factor that, that Anderson did. And that's why I kept telling people, don't worry about Anderson being in there, you know, for Kelvin Benjamin's sake. They spent a lot of time, you know, playing together because Cam was recovering from, you know, various injuries throughout the offseason. So Anderson and Benjamin are really familiar with each other. But the drumbeat throughout, you know, the offseason did seem to indicate that, you know, Benjamin and Newton were putting in that extra time on and off the field to become familiar with each other. I expect, you know,
that's kind of best shape of his life stuff.
Yeah, I hear you, but I think it matters for somebody like Kelvin Benjamin, who I think needed that. You know, I know this is pretty anecdotal stuff, and sometimes that doesn't always matter with fantasy football. But I think for a player like Benjamin, who came into the league with so many like, you know, oh, how engaged is he going to be? Or you know, I think it matters for a player like that. So I like you said, it is a possibility. I don't expect it to happen, but it could. And just another one from me, another situation that I expect to kind of people to react the wrong way from week one is Steve Smith and Torrey Smith from the Ravens in week one. You know, Smith had, you know, he's like the fourth ranked PPR wide receiver right now. You know, he's owned in 100% of ESPN leagues. I saw that today. Steve Smith, and I think I saw Raymond Sutherland or Summerlin of Roto World, you know, tweet out earlier in the week that he was averaging, you know, 2.7 yards per target or something before his 80 plus yard score, which was, you know, amazing. And you know, as somebody who really appreciates Steve Smith, it was really cool to see he can still do that sort of stuff. But I don't think he's going to have we definitely just saw Steve Smith's best game of the year. I don't think he's going to have, you know, consistent starting value in fantasy leagues. You know, he's that number two receiver there.
He still saw 15 targets. Like, it's not just that he had an 80-yard score. This isn't DeAndre Hopkins. This is a guy who saw 15 targets in an offense that threw a lot because they're going to have to throw a lot. They have, you know, we're not going to get into the whole Ray Rice thing, but they're much less talented at running back than they were this time last month.
Definitely.
And that's including fumble issues and injury issues with Bernard Pierce. Justin Forsett and Lorenzo Talaferro are basically their top backs moving forward, with Pierce kind of working his way back in as he, you know, regains confidence and health. They're going to throw a lot, and Pitt is going to be heavily targeted, and both Smiths are going to be heavily targeted, because it's possible that Flacco may throw 50 times a game half of the season. And so Smith does have value. No, he's not worth selling the farm for, but
no.
I think we could see another game like this, another 10 catch, 100 yards and a touchdown. I don't think that's out of the question for a guy who is in a role where he's not drawing the best defender every time anymore. You know, no matter who they're playing, like, Torrey's going to get the better defender and more of the attention. And so, like, I feel like it's something that we may still see some more of that. Like, if he's on your waiver wire for some reason, like, you want to go get him, like, obviously in ESPN leagues, he's probably not. But and if you've got him, like, hold on to him unless somebody offers you a lot. But, like, I feel like coming into the season, and this is going back to what we said at the front, like, he's a guy I liked because I like his situation. I like his role there as kind of a second or third option in the passing game for a team that's probably not going to be very good otherwise. But they do have a quarterback who is good for fantasy relevance and you know, a nice set of receivers to kind of take the pressure off of each other. So I do feel like there's some possibilities there. But I totally understand that you don't want to overreact to it, obviously. And I don't think, you know, if somebody, you know, offered me Mike Wallace, you know, or you tried to, you know, do a trade like that, like, I feel like there's still enough of a gap there that, like we've said, you don't want to overreact too much and do something like that. But let's move ahead and let's look forward to week two of the regular season. And so we'll just go position by position and quickly just give a couple guys at each spot that we like or don't like. And we'll start at quarterback. And I will just say that I'm not going to give away all my secrets for this week. There are quite a few on numberfire.com that aren't really secrets, so you can go find them. But and I may steal your thunder here. I'm not sure how you feel about this guy, but I am all about the Jake Locker this week. I've actually already put my money where my mouth is, and I have dropped Robert Griffin III for Jake Locker in multiple leagues.
Love it.
to start him this week because he's playing the Dallas Cowboys, and he played really well against the Chiefs. Took what they gave him, was under pressure a little bit, but you know, stood in tall when he had the time, and you know, that game became a blowout, and then he just managed the game and got him the win. And you know, the Cowboys will probably be a little more stiff competition than the Chiefs, which is crazy to think, but and they're a worse matchup defensively, or a better matchup from Locker's perspective. So I really like Jake Locker this week, and I feel like if you there's a handful of quarterbacks you should keep at all costs at this point, but there's a lot of quarterbacks that you might be starting that are worth dropping for Jake Locker this week.
Yeah, I definitely agree on Locker. And I mean, Locker's a, you know, he's a good player.
Yes.
You know, he's shown us that when he's on the field. I mean, he, you know, odds are he might not play all 16 games, but you know, who cares? If you're if you're at the point where you're starting Jake Locker, you're probably streaming quarterbacks anyway, so you don't really care if he's not going to start all 16. Yeah. And in daily leagues, I mean, he's still like $7,400 on FanDuel right now. So, yeah. I mean, you know, you have to. I mean, I'm going to be probably putting him in all my daily lineups.
And stacking him with any one of his three primary targets.
Especially, you know, I think, I mean, because I've already been going through FanDuel prices and everything, because I'm really trying to actually be good at daily fantasy this year. Nate Washington is just dirt cheap.
Yeah, and, you know, I said three, and I wasn't even thinking of Nate Washington, because absolutely, he's priced well, and he is higher on that depth chart. You know, I still like Justin Hunter's upside to be a big play guy. We saw against the Chiefs, he had a really nice, like 40-yard reception where he had a defender on him who had good, you know, inside leverage and was right on his hip, and Locker just dropped it right in the basket, and he's 6'5", and his defender was 5'10", and there's just nothing you can do.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a hint at what we could see. He just has to get more targets. But yeah, Kendall Wright is a good option this week. Delanie Walker is a good option this week. I know you hate him, but Sean Green is a good option this week.
Yeah. I mean, even Dexter McCluster too.
And
he's on DraftKings. I'm pretty sure he's like $3,000.
He is right minimum price on DraftKings. Yeah,
yeah.
That's on DraftKings. So
that's incredible. I mean, you have to consider that. That's great value. I mean, that's cool. It's going to be that way every week when you do matchups. Who's playing the Cowboys? You know, and this week it just happens to actually be an offense that has
a lot of undervalued players. Yeah.
Plenty of excitement. And just, I mean, I really like to, just another point to make about Washington. I really like playing him and Locker as opposed to, you know, this is daily leagues, you know, pretty specifically. I like playing Locker and Washington because, you know, everybody's going to be trying to grab Wright or Hunter, you know, and I think Wright or Hunter. And then I think Washington, you know, he's that guy that has, you know, one or two random good games a year, and this will probably be one of them. So, sure. Yeah, I think that's it. But
it's the contrarian play, which particularly in tournaments you want.
Definitely.
If you're on DraftKings and you're doing some cash games, I feel like Wright is the safest play, particularly since it's full PPR format. But we'll go back to quarterbacks, and we'll talk about those guys here in a little bit. One guy that I'm avoiding this week is Tom Brady. You know, there are certain situations where I would drop him in season-long formats at this point. If you're in a 10-team league or maybe even a 12-team league, I would consider dropping him for an Andy Dalton, a Carson Palmer, or Jake Locker this week, a guy like that. You know, if I wouldn't start Phillip Rivers this week, but, you know, maybe if you want to hold on to Brady and then switch him out for Rivers next week or something, you know, like these fringe guys that are maybe on your waiver wire, like I'm not going to drop him for, you know, Josh McCown or Joe Flacco or anything, but like, I feel like there's legitimate concerns that Brady has just taken a step back. Not that he's totally collapsed and is never going to be good again, but that he's taken that step back. And they're playing Minnesota, who, you know, I don't think we can say that they're good, but, you know, they did at least...
they look damn good.
Yeah, they did better than... I mean, well, let's just consider this. Coming into the season, you would have figured that the Tampa Bay defense was better than the Minnesota defense through week one, both playing against backup quarterbacks. You know, Minnesota has the definite edge there, so it's enough to scare me away from Tom Brady, and I'm going to pretty much avoid him at all costs, unless there's a league where, you know, I drafted him as my quarterback and there's just not enough depth out there, and I'm kind of stuck with him. Otherwise, I'm ready to move on. I think it's okay to move on from him in shallower leagues where your waiver wire quarterback options are plentiful.
Yeah. And one guy you could consider dropping for who I like this week is Carson Palmer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I mean he's pretty much fantasy Twitter's kind of bae, you know. I mean everybody loves Carson Palmer as a streaming option. So yeah, that's not breaking news or anything. Yeah. But I mean he's playing the Giants this week and they look like, you know, similar to Dallas, they look like one of those teams that just kind of is a walking disaster.
And Palmer's good. They've got the two wide receivers that, you know, are going to be able to exploit that defense the same way that Megatron and Tate did last week. So, yeah, it's a perfect kind of continuation of what we saw against the Lions for the Giants, is that they're getting the same kind of offense with the same kind of weapons. You know, you got the back who can catch it out of the backfield. You've got two wide receivers. You've got a bevy of tight ends, none of which are really all that great. It's the same kind of matchup. Like, everything is similar to what they saw against Detroit last week, and they, you know, rolled over and died against Detroit. So,
yeah, I mean, they can't rush the passer
really
at all. They don't have...
Yeah, JPP's not himself anymore, and there's nobody else there who can get after the quarterback, and Rodgers Cromartie is not a lockdown corner at all. Yeah, there's a lot of concerns there if you're a Giants fan, but if you're not, you know, take advantage of that.
Yeah, and one more quarterback, and also kind of, you know, similar with the entire offense sort of thing. I like Jay Cutler to rebound from, you know, a little bit of a disappointment in week one. They're playing San Francisco defense, which looked really good against Tony Romo, but I still kind of expect them to be several notches below what we're used to seeing from them. You know, their corners aren't very good. And, you know, I still trust this Bears offense to be high powered. So, you know, same thing goes to Marshall and Jeffrey if he's fully, you know, a full to go and everything for Sunday. I expect that to be a good matchup that they can exploit.
Absolutely. Let's move on to running backs. We've already mentioned before, just to kind of recap, if you zoned out there, we've mentioned basically all of the Tennessee running backs, and we can include Sankey in there, even though he's clearly at the bottom of the totem pole. But if you've got him, this is the week to, you know, throw him in your flex spot if you don't have, you know, other good options, because he's definitely still in play against Dallas. But you know, apart from Tennessee, at the top of the totem pole, LeSean McCoy plays the Colts. That should be a high-scoring game, and he should be involved. Obviously, the first week of the season, both he and Charles kind of had some scares as to how they're going to be involved. For McCoy, I feel like there's no reason to be concerned except for Evan Mathis's injury. But again, you know, I'm not gonna overreact to that. And I'm going to feel confident playing him, especially against Indianapolis, who just don't have much talent on defense at all. And at the top of the totem pole for running backs as well, Marshawn Lynch is a guy that I actually might target at this point, just because that offense is ridiculous, and he is going to be the bell cow for that offense. He's really cheap and daily this week, so that's maybe a recommendation, is that, like, on DraftKings, he's 7,200, whereas McCoy is at 8,200, and Forte is at 8,000. Like, you know, to kind of drop a full tier to get to Marshawn Lynch this week, like, I'm definitely going to do that, particularly against San Diego, who allowed 100 yards to one-footed Andre Ellington and company as kind of a backfield by committee there for Arizona on Monday night.
Yeah, definitely. That's a good suggestion. He's a little more pricey on FanDuel.
FanDuel's prices are a little stubborn.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I agree. A few running backs kind of on the top of that totem pole that I really like this week as well. Monty Ball against the Chiefs. You know, the Chiefs are another one of those teams that look like they're just already in a nosedive. And I do think that's important.
Missing Derek Johnson and Mike DeVito is
exactly
a big loss for that defense.
Yeah, two of their best run defenders, you know.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's a big deal. And I think
and Poe got pushed around a little bit. Poe was everyone's darling last year, but I actually watched some of that game for a piece I'm doing for Roto Grinders, and he got pushed around. And so if he's not playing up to par, and without Johnson and DeVito, like, they've got the two pass rushers on the outside and not a lot else in the middle of that defense, and that's where Ball is gonna, you know, make his money this year.
Yeah, and I think, too, that, you know, Denver is going to smoke these guys, obviously, just like they were doing with the Colts. And I think if John Fox is still, you know, conservative to a fault, that even though he has Peyton Manning, I think they kind of lack that, you know, leave your foot on the throat sort of thing, and they'll definitely try to pound Ball, you know, at the end of the game. And my thoughts on Ball, I don't know why, I have to share this because I haven't said this yet, and if the thought occurred to me watching him on Sunday night, and I wish I had thought of this before the season, but what the deal with Ball is like, I don't, you know, if you're like me and you don't think he's a special talent, he's never going to be great. So he's probably never going to justify that. Like, you know, if he went at the 7th pick overall in the drafts, I don't think he's ever going to justify that. But he's never, his role alone dictates he's never going to suck. You know, he's just never going to be like absolutely unusable, terrible. So I don't know why that's not as shocking of a revelation, but I put it really well in my head. Anyways,
See, I feel like that's more of a true statement for Lynch than it is for Ball, because I see it.
I see them in similar, but I mean, Lynch, I think, is spectacular. I think he's a better player than Ball.
Absolutely. Ball's not a good, but he's maybe the most consistent, not talented player.
Yeah, I agree.
That there is out there. I'll buy that.
Yeah, and another back I like that's kind of on the top of that totem pole, I like Giovanni Bernard, and to an extent, Jeremy Hill is kind of a cheap play, too, because they're playing Atlanta, which I think is a pretty terrible defense. You know, Bernard got used a lot in week one.
I think 10 targets in addition to his work on the ground, yeah.
I know he had at least like 20 touches, and, you know, Hill only had 4 carries. I think that'll balance itself out a little, but I do think it means that, you know, Bernard is kind of, as I expected, he's the top dog there. It won't be quite so 50-50, but I think that, you know,
Hill not only didn't see many touches, he only played 10 snaps.
Yeah.
So I'm hesitant on the Hill call there, but I'm definitely all about Bernard.
I think just think it's a bad defense that, you know, he might pop in a touchdown. I mean, that's just, like I said,
but it's also a good offense. Cincinnati's defense is good, but I could see this game being high scoring enough to where they're going to want to keep Bernard in. So I'm not quite, there are other, you know, low cost, you know, running backs that I'd rather go with this week. For instance, I would rather go with Carlos Hyde if we're going with rookie backup running backs this week, instead of, you know, a guy like, Hill. Obviously the 49ers are going up against the Bears. The Bears running defense, you know, surrendered that essentially game winning run to Fred Jackson in overtime. Just to remind us how bad they are on defense. So you definitely want to target, you know, guys against the Bears. And, you know, Frank Gore is, if he's on your roster, you probably want to start him this week. But if you're searching, or if you're playing daily, you know, I don't mind, you know, quote unquote punting with a guy like Hyde this week, even though I've never really been crazy on him, but this is the week where you'd want to use him. And also, this is where, you know, like a guy like Sean Green, like if you're going to be scraping the bottom of the barrel anyway, you know, I'd rather go with a guy like Sean Green than Hill, just because I know Green's role is safer. You know, Green's the starter. He gets the most carries there. You know, Hill, while he's more talented than Sean Green, you know, I think I would, you know, agree with at least his upside is higher as an athlete for his career. But right now I feel like Green's a more consistent guy that, you know, you're going to find him on the same amount of waiver wires, and you're going to get him for the same price in daily fantasy. But I feel like Green is a safer pick. I don't hate Hill. If he's out there, you want to get him. Like if you're in a league that's shallow enough to where he's not owned, like you want him at this point, because this may be the week where he does score a touchdown and people start noticing. But I'm not ready to sell the farm. In terms of guys I'm going to avoid this week, I'm going to avoid DeMarco Murray in daily. Obviously, if you have him in season long, you need to still start him. But the Tennessee defense looked pretty good against Kansas City. Kansas City's offense is missing some key guys along the offensive line, either temporarily or permanently. And so, you know, they were able to shut down Jamaal Charles pretty easily. But I'm not sold that the Dallas offense is going to be some well-oiled machine that can't, you know, fall in the same way that the Kansas City offense did. They may be forced to throw the ball around a little more, and that'll still get Murray involved. But, you know, if you have other options this week, you know, maybe like if you started, you know, Murray, Bernard, and you know, like Ellington, or you know, if you got Terrence West on your bench who's starting against New Orleans this week, like, you know, maybe I'd bump a guy like that up instead of Murray, who I think has a pretty tough matchup.
Yeah, that's a good call. It just, especially daily leagues, because they're just, you know, players that are priced cheaper or similar
yeah,
to him.
Yeah, on DraftKings, Murray's 5,700 or 7,500, excuse me, and, and you can get for cheaper Adrian Peterson, Jamal Charles, Arian Foster, and Marshawn Lynch. Like, any four of those guys are a better play than Murray this week, even with his PPR, you know, bonuses kind of factored in.
Yeah, that's a pretty easy call. As far as, you know, other running backs go, I don't think there's too many, like, clear-cut avoid guys, except, you know, probably the Chargers guys. Ryan Matthews, I'm not going to play him against Seattle.
Yeah. Let's just put this out there. You don't want to start any Chargers this week.
If
you
yeah. as much as we came in, as much as, you know, especially I came in preaching, you know, don't worry about Aaron Rodgers and everything. I mean, that's Seattle.
I think we realized that they are maybe better than they were last year.
Which is just incredible.
Yeah, in the Seattle defense, they're definitely a team you want to avoid. Let's move on to wide receivers real quick and take a look at them at the top of the charts there. You know, harking back to what you said about the Bengals playing the Falcons, AJ Green is a must start pretty much everywhere. He's expensive in daily fantasy, but you want him in your lineups. Obviously, he's, you know, if you own him, you're starting him anyway. A guy that I know what you're going to think. I know what you're going to say, but just hear me out here. I like Vincent Jackson this week to bounce back. Daily fantasy, his price has plummeted already. Going up against St. Louis with, you know, a Josh McCown that's hopefully going to settle down a little bit and not try to do anything too crazy. But he is not only the best receiver on the team, but he had the best chemistry with McCown all preseason and all training camp long. And, you know, he looked his way quite a bit on Sunday against the Panthers. Jackson did have a couple of drops, but Jackson has dropped the ball for pretty much his whole career. That's just kind of part of what he does. So I like Vincent Jackson. I don't think it's time to bench him. If you drafted him, stick with him against St. Louis is a good matchup. And, you know, the Bucs are going to have to throw. They don't have the offensive line or the healthy running backs with Doug Martin nursing an injury. And he may play, but he's, you know, he might not be himself. They're going to have to throw to win this game, and it's going to involve Vincent Jackson. So you want him in your lineup this week. It's not time to bail on him just yet.
No, I think that's actually a pretty good call, and I think we can safely say after week one that and I kind of ranted about the Rams for a little bit there on Twitter today, that they've been this like emerging team for like 5+ years now. It seems like a pretty boring roller coaster to me. We're always just climbing up the hill. But anyways, I think we can safely say that they're not a good defense. They're at least not a potentially great defense, especially now with Chris Long hurt.
Yeah,
you know, hurt.
Chris Long is out.
That's a big deal. They don't have good second. They don't have good secondary players.
Their linebackers really aren't that great either.
So I think it's a good call. Yeah. I mean, I think Jackson, and you know, he's a big guy. I think they're going to want to get him, you know, on some quick patterns where he can kind of, you know, use his playmaking ability. I mean, you know, he's a guy that is a playmaker. He's a downfield threat. I expect him to kind of have a bounce back. I think that's a good call. So I'm not going to call you a homer for that.
And a couple other guys I like, obviously we talked about them earlier, Larry Fitzgerald, Michael Floyd. I like both of them this week. I like Eric Decker this week. I don't like Geno Smith as much as I did last week. I was all about Geno Smith and I still like him, but he does really poorly in games he loses. You know, correlation, causation, all that stuff. But you know, I'm just a little worried because I know they're not going to win this game against Green Bay. But I am okay with Decker because Decker doesn't get punished for interceptions. So I do like Eric Decker this week. Who are a couple of wide receivers that you are targeting this week?
Yeah, on the flip side of that matchup, I like Jordy Nelson a lot. You know, because I mean, those Jets corners, I think we're going to kind of see it come to bear more than we did. And we did see it a little bit, too, with Oakland. You know, Derek Carr had that nice long touchdown to former Packers receiver James Jones. I think Nelson's going to be the beneficiary of that this week. That's a pretty easy call for me. I like Anquan Boldin a lot. You know, I mean, this guy's just never done. And I mean, the Bears defense is still pretty bad. And, you know, he's just a guy that Kaepernick trusts. I like him a lot. You know, kind of going down the totem pole. I think Jeremy Maclin could have another nice game against the Colts defense because they're terrible. Yeah. You know, that. I think Riley Cooper is probably a guy we've kind of seen the best of already at this point. And I think Macklin is for while he's healthy, at least, is the preferred target there. Mike Wallace, I don't think what we saw in week one is a fluke. You know, I liked Wallace coming into the year a little bit, and I think I'm really pleased with what I saw in week one. You know, what a novel concept. You pay this guy an inadvisable amount of money, you might as well like feature him, find creative ways to get him the ball, which they did. And you know, he looked good against Darrell Revis even a few times. You know, just maybe
he's always looked good against Darrell Revis. Revis' kryptonite, but yeah, absolutely
right. He's a good player. I think he got a bad rap when he gets paid because for some reason.
Well, and he wasn't good.
No, yeah, he's not as good as his money indicates, yeah. but he's a pretty good player. And yes. Buffalo is not. I don't think they have any corners at this point that I'm scared of or whatever. So I think that's a good call, you know. And we've already talked about the Titans guys. You know, Cleveland didn't look good at all against Pittsburgh. So we talked about Cooks earlier, and that's a guy that I want to see more from. I want to see if he's, because you know, Joe Hayden typically, you know, battles. He's pretty good against number one receivers who aren't Antonio Brown. And so I think he, you know, he's going to lock up with somebody, but I don't think it's going to be Cooks. So that's one I want to watch.
See, that's the thing though, is who does he lock up with? Cause they moved Colston into the slot quite a bit.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know, but
are they going to throw him on Robert Meacham? Like, I mean, at this point, you know, I feel like Cooks is going to see some of Hayden just cause the Saints move their receivers around. Like Hayden may wind up on Jimmy Graham at times.
I think that's probably the smart play, but I don't know. I don't think Hayden's quite.
But I don't think you need to worry about Hayden enough to.
No, yeah, exactly.
There are 2.5 corners that I will not play against.
Yeah.
The half meaning Sherman, because really it's more the whole Seattle defense. And I don't play against Patrick Peterson, even though he's really not that great. But he does have a tangible effect on how quarterbacks kind of see their defense and Revis. I don't mess against Revis, even Wallace, who I like, and know that he always beats him. Like, I just, you know, trust Revis too much there. But
yeah, I benched Wallace, you know, obviously foolishly, but there were a few leagues that I put Wallace on the bench, at least for week one against Revis, just to see. So I hear you on that. Two more. Michael Floyd, you know, I think we've kind of seen that the passing of the torch is taking place at least a little bit,
yeah.
You know, and against the Giants, we already talked about that. I think that's a, you know, a smart play. And you know, we talked about Kelvin Benjamin, you know, the Lions were already pretty bad on the back end, and they're beat. They lost a corner.
Yeah. I'm just worried about that offense with, you know, a little better pass rush coming after them. Ziggy Ansah looked good. Sue looked good. Fairley looked good. You know, if whoever's under center is going to really be able to find him as often as efficiently, that is a concern for me. I'm not sold that the Carolina offense is going to be good at all this year.
No, me neither. But I think Benjamin is just for what he is and where you got him. I think he can.
Yeah, like if you drafted him, you should probably start him this week. But
yeah, I think he can give you every week, you know, flex value at least with more upside because he's his team's top target.
Yeah.
You know,
real quick on tight ends, before we get to questions, we mentioned Delanie Walker. Jermaine Gresham is now starting in Cincinnati. He plays Atlanta. You like that. Zach Ertz going against the Colts. That's good. Jordan Cameron, if he plays against the Saints, is good. I'm, you know, obviously there are a million different tight ends this year, which is why I'm okay streaming them. And if you've, you know, got one that's not named Gronkowski or Graham, I'm okay trading them for a different asset. But I know you feel differently. Do you have a tight end off the top of your head that you do or don't like this week?
There's none really that stick out because, you know, it's kind of just like you said, you know, there are those guys. And I think it's time to put, you know, Julius Thomas, definitely. I think it's Thomas, Graham, and Gronk now for me. That are, you know, every week guys. Cameron's banged up, so that's kind of a question mark. But other than that, yeah, I do think they're kind of all expendable. And I think you hit on all the matchups. Other than that, there's not really one that.
I mean, you know, I don't mind. If you're desperate, you can pick up Larry Donald and play him against the Cardinals. Just because how bad the Cardinals are against tight ends. But, like, don't bank on him. Don't drop Zach Ertz for him. Not that you would. Don't drop Dennis Pitta for him. don't drop Martellus Bennett for him. Like, don't do anything like that, even though it is a good matchup. But if you're streaming, like if you picked up Ladarius Green last week, I'm okay dropping him for Donald. But
yeah, I think there's three guys at tight end, you know, Ladarius Green, Dwayne Allen, and Travis Kelce, who we all, you know, wish we could see in a featured role, but each of them has an obstacle, you know, in the way.
I mean, I like Gates, and I found myself rooting for Green just because I benched Gates in daily and then a couple of my leagues because of his injury. But I feel like Gates is the better player. But yeah, Green definitely, you know, presents some athleticism that Gates doesn't have anymore. But that'll be interesting to watch. I feel like people have kind of overreacted on him a little bit, and will be continually frustrated by how Gates looks ahead of him and Eddie freaking Royal. Let's not talk about Eddie Royal. It's just going to make me mad. Let's get to you guys' questions. You guys referring to our audience, and we'll go through these pretty quick. On Twitter, we got a question from Matt Johnson, Matt J _ on NFL. And he asked, or he commented first, that Doug Martin has made him mad, and you know I'm there with you. and he said, "Do I start Spiller or Reggie Bush over him in week two?" With Martin's health and how bad that offensive line is, I'm okay benching him for either of those guys, even though I'm not really particularly high on either one. Yeah, I'm okay with going with Spiller or Bush. I would prefer Spiller just because Bush is. Matchup is tougher against Carolina. The Bills get the Bear? No, the Bills have the Bears this week. The Bills have the Dolphins, which is not as intimidating. They're better against... They have a pretty good pass rush in Cameron Wake, but I don't feel like their run defense is all that special. Jared Odrick looked like he got pushed around a little bit.
Their linebackers are really bad
this week, and their linebackers
are bad. And they're hurt.
Yeah, and so definitely I would go with Spiller there. It's weird that you'd be choosing between Martin, Spiller, and Bush for, you know, second running back spot. It makes me think that you drafted like me and got a lot of running backs, which is good. Feel free to trade Doug Martin at this point, though. If you've got that much depth at running back, just switch him for a comparable wide receiver, because he may never be good this year, as much as I hate to say that. That sounds like overreacting, but...
No, I agree with you.
I think in this case, if you've got the depth of the position, and you can get like a third or fourth round receiver, don't take DeAndre Hopkins, but you know, if you can get Torrey Smith or Roddy White or something for him, go ahead and do that. Jono Newton, who is at Jono Newton on Twitter, says has to start a rookie, asking, and this may be hypothetical or may not. Either way, it's a fun question. Have to start a rookie in week two. Crowell, Taliaferro, or Hearns? Crowell being Isaiah Crowell of the Browns, who, you know, came in as Ben Tate was out and did some things for the Browns. Taliaferro being Lorenzo of the Ravens, who we referred to a little bit earlier. And Hearns being Allen Hearns of the Jacksonville Jaguars. I don't think any of these guys are really guys you want in fantasy. If I had to pick one, it's Taliaferro, just because I feel like the players around him are the worst, and he has the clearest path to being relevant on a regular basis. That said, for week two, he's also got, you know, one of the tougher matchups. He plays on a Thursday night against Pittsburgh, as opposed to, you know, Hearns playing against Philly and Crowell playing against New Orleans. Like, those are both better matchups. Talaferro's the better season-long guy, but if I had to start one of these this week, it would be Crowell, just because I don't feel like Hearns can do what he did again. At least I feel like Crowell might get, you know, a goal line carry and get a touchdown against the Saints.
Yeah, I'm probably with you results-wise. Well, you mentioned Hearns. He played the Eagles in week one. He gets Washington this week, which is a pretty good matchup.
Yes, I knew it was a good matchup, and I just watched tape of him playing the Eagles. I knew that wasn't the case.
Either or, I mean, they're both pretty.
But they, the Eagles didn't put a hand on him, and when they did, he was not the same. He is not a physical receiver at all, and so, you know, Washington doesn't have necessarily anyone who's all that physical. But you know, if they just try to get a hand on him, you know, it'll totally throw him off. He is an undrafted rookie. He's not, you know, anything special as far as rookies do go. Like we mentioned earlier, you know, Hyde, Sankey, Hill, these are obviously guys that are probably not on your waiver wire, but they're guys that obviously are light years ahead of the guys we're talking about here. Even Terrence West. If we're looking at a Browns running back, that's the guy I want ahead of Kroll. But you know, that's not the question, and that's not, you know, possibly an option for you. So
right, I think all of these are kind of, I mean, they're all Hail Marys. And for me, I think Crowell is easily the best player. You know, I mean, these are all not highly regarded rookies, but I mean, you know, Crowell was undrafted because of, you know, other things other than his playing ability. I think you're just kind of hoping for one of these guys to make a big play. And I think Crowell's the guy that, I mean, he had like 5 carries and he scored 2 touchdowns. You know, I just think he's capable of doing something special, you know, and this is a Hail Mary sort of thing. You know, I think Taliaferro gets kind of hyped by default, or has intrigue by default, but we really haven't seen him do anything great yet. So he's kind of, I actually think he's the third option, especially him playing on Thursday night. Hearns, yeah, maybe sure, because he has a good matchup. But I think Crowell, and I like we mentioned West, and, you know, he's one that I actually skipped over when we're talking about running backs. But I like West a lot this week. You know, I think him, and I think a lot of West. I think a lot of Crowell, too. I think they can both, if Ben Tate is out for, and I mean, he's out for a little while, and he'll probably continue to be out. I think that they can both play a role and do some things in fantasy, but nothing consistent from these three guys.
Sure. Did we have any other questions? Did you get any others on Twitter?
We had the one from someone who asked, you know, would enjoy discussion of in-season roster construction through waivers and trades. I think we've kind of...
We have talked about that, and we will continue to.
That's going to be kind of a theme. I mean, that's what we're talking about now. You mentioned up at the top that, you know, I think the fantasy industry in general is so draft centric right now because, you know, it's really cool. It's super fun. Just like the regular NFL draft. It's really cool to talk about. You can build a lot from it, but this is a big part of it. Being good at the in-season stuff, knowing when to act, when not to act. So yeah, that's going to be something we talk about the whole
definitely, way. Definitely. We will continue to do that. I do want to, before we go, just really quick, like, Twitter short answer, as you get into daily fantasy sports, is something that I've been looking into a lot. What are your thoughts on stacking in a daily fantasy lineup? Just for, like I said, real quick, short answer here.
It really has to be either a great matchup, like we talked about with these, you know, with the like Locker and Hunter or whatever, Titans receiver, or a really great passing game. But then it usually costs too much. So it really, I usually do it for more of those matchup plays. I'm not super crazy about it, but I will do it if the opportunity presents itself.
Yeah, I actually really like to stack if I see, you know, a matchup that I like. And if particularly if it's with a quarterback who's a little cheaper and you know, who I'm trotting out there for a good matchup, like this week, you know, maybe if you toss out Locker, toss out Hunter, or, you know, if you're on DraftKings and you're taking advantage of Aaron Rodgers at a slightly reduced price, you want to go with Aaron Rodgers, Jordy Nelson, stack, you know, I feel like you can get some pretty good rosters that way. But particularly if you're taking a flyer on a quarterback and you know he's got a primary option, like if at some point this season you decided to start Josh McCown in daily fantasy, you'd want Vincent Jackson. You know, if you were to start Derek Carr, you'd want to take whoever, you know, his top guy is, just because it you're already taking a big chance by taking a flyer at quarterback. So doubling up definitely can help out. And if it's a great matchup, like if you know, want to spend up for Peyton, it may also be worth it to spend up for Demaryius in that week too. Yeah. So, that can sometimes be worth it, but I don't feel like it's a must. I feel like it's a tool that you can use, but it's not a must. But just consider the fact that if you're banking on your quarterback in daily fantasy, it's because you think that he's going to help you score more than, you know, 70% of the people you're playing against. So he's going to do well enough to facilitate at least one relevant receiver. So if you get that guy too, you know, that can really help your team. But definitely wanted to get that out there. We will continue to give you weekly and daily fantasy advice every week of the year here on the Fantasy Game Plan Podcast. And if you have any questions, if you want to run a situation by us, if you want to, you know, just generally talk about fantasy. I've had a guy who pretty much had me advising him on some trades for the past couple of days, and I love doing that. Like, even though trading is not really my expertise, you know, at least provide some a different set of eyes on your trades, hit us up on Twitter. You can find me at LeoHowell8. You can find Matt
at MattHarmon_BYB.
And you can also hit up the Fantasy Game Plan account, which is at Fantasy Game Plan. And just ask us your questions, and we will definitely respond to them. You can also email us at fantasygameplan@gmail.com if you have a longer question that you want for the podcast. And if you just want to ask us questions not for the podcast too, that's fine. We will answer those as well. You can check out my work. I'm actually just started writing for rotogrinders.com, where I'm doing tape-based retrospective and predictive articles every week for daily fantasy. So if you play daily fantasy in particular, Roto Grinders is, first of all, if you play daily fantasy and you don't go to the Roto Grinders, you need to fix that. And second of all, you know, they've got a lot of great tools and stuff, so that if you don't play daily fantasy and you want to, if you sign up through them, they'll give you some, and they don't pay me to say this, but because I use this, which is why I know about it, you can get some really great tools and stuff just by using their referral links. So definitely check them out if you haven't before. That's rotogrinders.com. You can also find me at numberfire.com, where I do streaming articles and a bunch of other stuff every week, and daily fantasy, and at bucksnation.com if you care about the Bucks, which I don't blame you if you don't. And Matt, where can everybody find you?
Yeah, I'm a lot of different places right now. Football Guys is mostly my fantasy stuff, and I'm doing my Reception Perception, which I've mentioned a little bit on the podcast. I'm going to be running kind of a fantasy based, you know, sort of looking at wide receivers like this. I just submitted my first one right before we recorded, looking at Torrey Smith, running him through some of the numbers. And I've also added a few little, I guess you could say, metrics. I don't know. You know, this is just my stuff. This is just something I have come up with. You know, it's about, you know, I think I've come up with is just, you know, success rate versus coverage, you know, sort of stuff. So looking at stuff like that, so you can find that at Football Guys. Also scouting for Optimum Scouting if you care about the Mountain West Conference. You can
which
find
you
my,
should.
Which you should. There's a lot of
all DeHart everything.
Yeah, there's a lot of, well, he didn't have a very good game last week, but that's a whole other thing.
Neither did my boy Grayson, but
no, that was rough. but yeah. So if you care about the Mountain West Conference, we can
we're going to rename this podcast the Colorado State Game Plan, and we're just going to talk about Colorado State draft prospects.
Hey, I'm totally cool with that, I guess. But yeah, and also now I'm writing, if you care about the Panthers, I'm doing tape-based matchup breakdowns over there, blackandbluereview.com, which is really pretty much the up-and-coming, you know, Panthers resource out there.
As an SB Nation employee, I'm required to tell you about Cat Scratch Reader as well, which is another place you could go. But yeah, Black Blue
Review. They've been around.
Yes, they have been around. They're not up and coming.
That's not up and coming. But yeah, so Bill does a great job there, and he's, you know, been gracious enough to, after much convincing, to take me on to let him do some.
And
let me do some
you
stuff
do
there.
a hangout on Sunday mornings at for Sportable. Is that right?
Yeah, Dan Schneier and I he's from PFF Fantasy, Fox Sports 1, or Fox Sports, that's fine, I'm not talking about TV. So we do a hangout every Sunday morning. It'll usually be, it goes live, you know, either 9 or 10 a.m., just depending on our schedule. And we'll be doing basically, you know, everything you need to know about fantasy that day. We'll be talking about it on the hangout. You know, you can ask questions during it using the hashtag hot takes and hot cakes. You know, you got to have some hot takes to go with your morning pancakes. And, you know, we have TJ Hernandez on, who's just great daily fantasy resource. And he gives some great advice too. So that we did our first episode last week, and it went pretty well. So we're only going to get better. But yeah, so that's a fun thing.
Despite the name. Definitely something that you should.
Well, I didn't come up with it. You can take that up with Sal. That's his baby.
It's not so bad. It's super cheesy. I like it. I like it in a cringeworthy kind of way.
Right. I think that's what we're going for.
Yeah. No. Sal has a unique sense of humor anyway. So that definitely shines through. But that'll do it for this week of the Fantasy Game Plan. So for Matt, I am Leo. Definitely send us your questions and comments and thoughts over the course of this week. And if you're hearing this podcast for the first time and you like it and you want to hear more, you can find them posted every week at on Matt's website, The Backyard Banter, which you can find at thebackyardbanter.com. You can also find it on iTunes. Just search for Fantasy Game Plan. You can subscribe there and get all the episodes as they're released. But for Matt, I am Leo, and we will see you next week.